Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
It must be Tuesday. We're with our admirable friends.
Yes, we are. Admirable friends, hello.
Hello out there.
Tonight's show.
Yes, share.
Drum roll.
Drum roll.
I'm not thinking this is really a hot topic for people. Why, you ask? Because we didn't get a ton of emails regarding vice and virtue.
Well, we didn't even frame it as vice and virtue. We tried to do it a little bit different this time. We said, are virtuous acts skillful, as a question? And we still didn't get much response. I think this virtue is a real sticky point. It's a bugaboo.
Excuse me.
So I actually just did a Facebook post, and I said our show's getting ready to go on. And I put, tonight's show is on virtuous actions. Are virtuous actions skillful? I'm trying, and Alex and I were working on other words for virtue today. We work on character and other ways to, because it's misunderstood. The term is misunderstood.
Yeah, why do we start looking for other terms is a great place to start. I think that kind of builds into why this is such a kind of a sticky or just a subject, I don't know, that's not given its due.
Well, I think it's because there's either a spiritual or religious connotation with it. There's the feeling that, we're not up to speed, maybe, on our virtue.
It sets the bar maybe too high
to reach,
and so
society.
People think it's like, I mean, yeah.
And a lot of times it's a lot of conceptual stuff. What do you do with virtue besides just kind of talk in your head about it, and ask yourself, am I living virtuous?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to try to break it all down.
I think we're also, we've been drawn to virtue being something that's either society teaches us, religion teaches us, and as a result, I think there's an element of not wanting to be judged from the outside.
Hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
We're sick of being judged or that kind of attitude. I think there is some issues of virtue and morality problems in our society, which we're all part of, so maybe we're running away from it. But that's what we're going to get into tonight. And I think by the time, if those of you that are listening, either on podcast or live, can stay with us, I think you're going to find that virtue is an exciting practice that can really help you. And we're going to tie it together, especially since last week, right in the backdrop of, which is one of our favorite shows, is on authenticity,
right,
and getting down to intention. Hopefully we can tie together how virtue helps us be authentic. How about that? Maybe that's the way I should have phrased the email. How does virtue help us be authentic, Alex?
Ah.
That captures our discussion this afternoon.
It does.
So why don't I throw that out there, as a challenge?
Well, go right ahead.
Anybody who's listening out there?
Anybody has an idea? How does virtue? Go to our chat line, bbsradio.com, admirable friends. How about that one? How could I be more authentic with virtuous actions? How does that help me in my plan to be authentic? And authentic, as we discussed last week, was being honest and true about our intentions that preceded our actions.
I like the way you framed that. I think we got something here.
You got something?
I do.
Let's crank it. Okay, well, before we get into the body of the show, you can still email us at hello@admirablefriends.org or get on the chat line and type in some thoughts about this. We do have some material from some guests, but I'd like to go through, first of all, I want to give a thanks to all those that attended the retreat last
night. I'm glad you said that. I was going to just cut in if you started that and say the same thing. Go ahead.
We had 16 people.
At a full day retreat at Fort Worth Meditation.
Yeah. And probably half the group had never been to a retreat before.
Right.
So we spent a day together, and I thought it was a terrific day, and so did a lot of other people.
Absolutely. And I too am grateful for all the people that took the time out to spend a whole day in silence. Whole day in silence with other people in silence. And at the end of it all, I said, that was great.
I heard there was a mailman or somebody who came up on you all while you were having a nice quiet meal.
Yeah, how you doing?
You want to share that experience?
He's watching, how you doing? Everybody's nodding because there was noble silence and we weren't supposed to be speaking
nodding.
Unless
mm-hmm.
It was absolutely necessary is the way we framed the rules. Don't speak during the whole day. Silently eat. And And he was just had a great, great sense of humor. He walked up and walked onto the porch steps. How you doing? Everybody goes, hmm. You probably said, "What a bunch of crumbs these people
are!" I know, right?
It was pretty cool.
Actually, before we get into the public gratitudes, I want to take a moment to acknowledge you, Carol, and great my gratitude towards you. And I want to talk about because it relates to the retreat. And I'm thinking about this one on the fly. I'm grateful for you standing me up at the end of the retreat telling me, why did you ever say what you said when people asked how your retreat went? To frame it for our audience, everybody had given their opinion and they were all having great experience with the retreat, and someone turned to me and said, buddy, how'd it go for you? And I said, it stunk. And then I kind of backtracked after I spoke without really being skillful. And I said, well, it stunk for me because I've always been to retreats, but as a retreatant, not as the kind of the group leader. So I was worried so much about round the clock and making sure everybody had a good time that I really didn't have a retreat for myself. The mind was spinning and I wasn't able to. So I remember when you said it, and it kind of, I said to you right away, I flashed back and said, well, I was honest, right? But that wasn't my true intentions, you know? So I reflected on it for a while. And so I'm grateful to you for standing me up and reflect on it. And the reason I bring that up is I want to apologize for those that were there, that I might have downplayed the importance of their retreat and making a statement about mine not being so great. Came across after I thought about it as pretty selfish on my part.
See, you're sharing it with your admirable friends, and so
yeah, I feel better, right?
Well,
anyways, let's go to the system, and let's go and look at the public acts of kindness, the appreciations, and the gratitudes.
Which ones do you want to do first?
Well, we can go right off the top and start with the acts of kindness. And under the practice menu in our admirable friends site, we have generosity, which is we'll be covering that in a couple of weeks, but. Under that practice menu, we have some journal entries that have to do with acts of kindness, appreciations, and gratitudes. So, Alex, why don't you start with a public act of kindness?
Okay.
Oh, this is do the one I posted on Facebook. People really like that one.
I don't have that right here in front of me. If you want to go ahead and bring
you
that
do
up.
Well, let's empty the trash. The action was empty the trash, and it was an intangible act, arguably quite could be tangible, but it's intangible. No sense of obligation. And the person's reflection on the action was, I have always emptied the trash, but it has been an irritation that no one else appears to notice when it needs emptying. This time I took joy from the fact that others will not have to see the trash needs emptying. Same action, different attitude, opens up so many possibilities for being kind. So that's a pretty cool act of kindness. And we posted that on Facebook, and that got quite a bit of nods on that one.
Very nice. Got one here. The action was they parked their vehicle down the street from their house so that the workers with a concrete mixer would not have to move. Labeled it as tangible, and reflecting upon the act, this person says, "I sat there debating how long I would wait before getting out of the car to ask them to move, and in that time realized it was a chance for an act of kindness."
That's nice.
Sometimes that space really helps if you just kind of pull back for just a second.
I've got one here. The act of kindness was checking on a friend to see how she's doing since her father's in the hospital. It was no sense of obligation. And the reflection on this action was, I care about her, and I want her to know she has support if she needs it.
So just to reframe, when we put acts of kindness, and we hope you all participate on the website with it, and when appropriate, choose to share it with everyone. Of course, it's anonymous. So you actually record the thought, word, or action. You describe whether it's tangible or intangible. You acknowledge there's no sense of obligation, because one of the things we're trying to do is frame that kindness in a true gift, which we'll talk about in generosity, but no sense of obligation. In other words, not in the economy of exchange, but a true gift. And then a reflection on the thought, word, or action.
You know what I often see as an act of kindness? I see it as the opposite kind of, well, not the opposite of a gratitude, but because you can have an act of gratitude towards yourself. But the act of kindness is kind of the reverse. It is an act that you would think somebody else might list as their gratitude.
Right. Well, I think you're stretching it when you say you can do a gratitude towards yourself, because that's why we have the acts of kindness. Mm-hmm. That's more geared towards yourself, and the gratitude is recognizing that the kind act of someone else.
Correct.
So you're right, Alex. It's a mirror between the two.
Mm-hmm. But it's a form of, it's the generosity in action.
It's generosity in action for sure. And the reason why I think acts of kindness might be a little bit easier to do than gratitude, because the gratitude takes some work. I think appreciation is the easiest out of the three, because you can appreciate the sunshine, you can appreciate a good night's sleep, and notice the common denominator is what's coming your way. The moment you start getting into acts of kindness and gratitudes, you're really having to give without condition. And that's really where the practice is challenges us. Okay, let's go into some appreciations. Carol?
I've got one appreciation here. Somebody put down, new neighbors improving the outside of their home. So they were appreciative of that.
Okay.
This is a great one. A self-starting car on cold days.
Having resources to cook up a hot breakfast. There's somebody that's appreciating their electricity, taking the moment to do it. The positive feeling that I have after meditation.
I have the group of people I have around me who provide support and help.
Notice the pages of how much there is. There's just tons of appreciation.
A daily drive to school with my son. Yeah, there's just so many here. It's great to see these.
Again, it's what makes these... Someone has gone to the computer daily or weekly or every other day and entered these things. And I know from doing them, it really sets your day. It makes
even before that, the intention to sit down and reflect.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go into some gratitudes. Anybody want to take any publics?
I haven't gotten there yet. Wait a minute.
Okay, I'll give one. Carving out time to meet and share with others their experiences and insights. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. And the reflection is, it motivates me to commit more to my practice. Carving out time to meet with you. So basically, that's an admirable friends endorsement right there.
Mm-hmm. I've got one here, a gratitude. The action was skillfully saying very little when a situation was tense. The person said they trusted their intentions and they know they went out of their way. The reflection on this action was definitely learned from this one.
That's quite personal. Alex, another one before we start our show?
Sure. The action was checking on my house while I am away. They trusted their intentions and knew that the...
So somebody checked
on their house while they were out of, while they were gone. Reflecting on it, having good relationships with neighbors adds a sense of security. I like that. I think that relationships are extremely important, and so is security. So.
Oh, it's a nice neighborly thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had neighbors that I know. I've had neighbors that I don't know. So, you know, when you can, you can have them come over and check on you, and that's a... Sometimes can save you some money if they look after pets and all that.
Yeah.
All right, let's get after the virtue. Practicing virtue is what we're talking about rather than being virtuous. Being virtuous is an outcome, right? Your desire to be a virtuous being.
And it makes it sound, too, when you put it that way, it makes it sound like it's beyond, it's like putting yourself on a pedestal with a big S on your chest like Superman. Do you know what I mean? It's like I'm something special.
But when you say practicing virtue...
That's different.
That's a question mark, though, isn't it? What does that mean?
That seems like it's a different approach.
Yeah, what does it mean when I practice being virtuous? And particularly in the context of our program. And let's just back up. Let's back the whole program up again, okay? We're about admirable friends, so we're working together on a program, and we're trying to move to a less stressful life, one that has more predictable, reliable, contentedness, happiness kind of thing, right? And we're doing this by focusing on 10 different practices called the ideal mind qualities. And we start with determination,
right?
With an overall determination, basically, as to hopefully that this is a very important part of our life. And then we also have weekly determination. So each week, whether it's a Sunday or a Monday, we start our week with a new determination, which would normally be a goal. And as an overall mind quality, that determination basically needs four kinds of aspects to it to make it a good determination. Right? It has to be a wise determination, number one, category number one. It has to be truthful, category number two. Category number three, there has to be a letting go or restraint element to it. And category number four, it needs to be a calming effect to the determination. Now, today we're covering virtue, which is under the truthful category. We covered in the last, and authenticity was the first one of the truthful. So we started with determination, then we moved to the wisdom category, which included discernment and goodwill. Then we proceeded to truth, starting last week with intentions. And we talk, if you remember, about being true to the inner side of intention, trying to get to why, what motivates us? What motivates us to do what we do? And autopilot being the opposite of authenticity, meaning that we really weren't paying attention to intention and we were just acting out of habit, right? So last week, we had a lot of good conversation, a lot of inspiring words as to ways to pay more attention to intention. So now, with that as a framework, virtue. What is taking a virtue as a practice do for us? Alex, you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah. Let me define, just go through the definition here, virtue. We've got it defined as a characteristic of a person which supports individual moral excellence and collective well-being. I do like this definition because it kind of pulls away from that the stigma of virtue, and I think that's kind of the first barrier of virtue we have to get by, is that it really doesn't begin to take on this role of being higher than
morally superior
until we grab a hold of it and do something with it. Virtue by itself is a concept that's out there freestanding the way I see it, and when we take it on, we then go ahead and put it into its categories and subject to external conditions.
Okay.
Because I think once you force it on others or use it as a morally superior coat to put on, then that's already crossing to the unskillful side.
Right.
And there's so many virtues out there, but most of these are culturally conditioned. But one culture, you should know this as an anthropologist, Alex.
Right.
I mean, one culture considers a virtue.
Exactly.
Another one doesn't. And then you've got religious that has an impact on what's a virtue and what isn't.
And when you look at virtue and you look at it across cultures and across religions, they all have a spot for virtue somewhere.
Right.
So when we see that, it gives us hope to kind of pull back and look at this picture of virtue. Not really, you know, we always talk about looking things in a detailed sense, but sometimes it's good to look at it from a very broad sense, so you can kind of get your grips on it. Mm-hmm. And so when we kind of pull back, we see that, okay, there's something to this virtue because everybody sees a spot in their life for virtue of some sort. And so when looking at virtue, and everybody you kind of see uses in one way or other, you say, wow, that looks like a tool, a useful tool.
Right.
And so we begin to see how virtue can be used as a tool strategically to really better our inner world and kind of bring together externals and internals, relationships and things like that. And so that gives the freedom for virtue to be used as a tool how it needs to be under whatever religion or whatever culture. It can kind of adapt to those sorts of...
Earlier, Alex, you were telling me, we were talking about how some people might call it a moral compass. Some people, I said, I liked the phrase, the gold standard by which we act.
Right.
And you had one yourself, did you not?
I think Plato had referred to it as maximum goodness. And so we see, and I believe he was talking about the tool that when you set it up as that high standard, that maximum goodness, as though if you were to get maximum goodness out of an action, it would be in line with it being virtuous or holding true to your virtue. So where vice, on the other hand, can be, the opposite, maximum stress.
Right.
You know,
well, that's why I want to bring it back to the context of our program, because virtues are all over the board.
Right. So, yeah,
so
exactly.
let's get to our program. Our program is principally about putting things, actions, thoughts, intentions, all in the context of leading us out of stress into a more reliable happiness.
That's correct.
From an inner standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So one of the tenets of our program, let's say the highest level is stress reduction. And then below that, we have this thing that we call, as part of our resolute thinking in the program, is that we resolve to live a more harmless life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? To stop acting harmful. And I think that's a good framework for us to look at virtue with.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I like how we're framing it, because whoever's out there listening, or if you tune in and you hear, you experience what we are specifically about virtues, know that those virtues are the ones we're testing, because it really ties back to our overall determination with being an admirable friend,
right,
causing less stress, causing less harm. So we tie it back to those, and those are the virtues that we want to work with,
right,
in conjunction with the determination.
Right.
So
wishing,
that's how you
wishing
can
others
see,
well, less harm. All of this.
So when we're speaking to these specific virtues here that we're going to get into a little bit, know that they're tied a little bit to our determination, what we've chosen. So
yes,
of course, we do need to speak to the specifics of our own experience. I think we're also leaving it open to say, test it with your own determination what virtues are going to lead to you getting that accomplished.
And another thing about the program and how we're talking about reliable happiness and non-harming to ourselves and others and lessening the stress is that these are all, once again, like fabric. We're weaving a fabric here.
Right.
And, this will come, virtue's going to come, like some of the benefits of a good character are it lessens the regrets that we live with, or it lessens the mind's chatter. Well, for me, that kind of piggybacks on to what we talked about last week about authenticity and truth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I was talking with Alex today. For instance, let me take a virtue, right? Let's take one that we took as a practice, as an internal practice. And let's say it is that I'm going to take skillful speech as a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to practice with this week is I'm going to practice harmonious speech, so I don't want any non-harming would be harmonious speech.
That's
right?
Why you chose speech, because your words can affect others and harm them and harm yourself.
So now I pick that as my action.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I'm out there practicing, and all of a sudden I violate it. Well, there's a perfect case, my gratitude.
Right.
I spoke with speech that could have harmed somebody after the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, in your case, you helped me as an admirable friend, but if I had embodied that as a virtue, as a practice, then my violation of that would be my warning to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, how would I ever know the intention behind my poor speech if I wasn't practicing harmonious speech? See, the way I look at it, virtue is we're talking about an action, not a thought, when we talk about a virtue. It's almost like putting a dam on a river. You're saying, I'm going to say no, and I'm going to hold restraint to these actions. I won't lie. I won't have harmful speech. Right? So I set this up as a precept or a promise that I make to myself. Mm-hmm. I won't do this. So then I go out during the day, and I violate it. Well, when I violate it, then I have to ask the questions, what was my intention? If I didn't violate, if there was no, how would I ever get to intention if I didn't say that I won't do this?
Yeah, I was looking into this. It's one of those, I was listening into someone talk about virtue, and they were saying that we almost take on virtues to, human succumbs to pleasure, and it can lead us down to making very unskillful choices. So we had to create a tool that was going to be almost a check and balance on that runaway mind, runaway pleasure that we just can't control. So we almost intuitively set up this moral excellence to keep us on the road to say, this is the direction we've got to go.
Yeah, that was fundamental in Aristotle.
It was fundamental in Aristotle's planning of humanity. And I think it really is. It becomes this real kind of get you back to homeostasis kind of thing.
Well, I get to the point. How would you know your intention if you weren't setting up a way to trip it, to trip the meter?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Well,
you've got to test the system.
You've got to test the system. So this is why if we stop looking at trying to be pious or superior,
right,
and we look at it as a training tool, as a way for us to find out our intentions, getting back to last week.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, let's put a dam on the actions, and let's put a trip meter that says when our actions, we trip.
Right.
When we fall, mm-hmm, by setting a virtue as a tool like that. Then when we fall, we get to the intention.
Exactly. We almost set it up. You know, we talked about being morally excellent. We almost do it because we almost know we can't. You ever heard,
right,
someone say you can't be perfect? Well, we know that, but yet we set these perfect ideals. Well, we almost need to because we have to fail in a sense to overcome it.
Well,
if that
Carol,
makes any sense.
If Carol hadn't brought it to my attention what I had said, or either she brings it to my attention as an admirable friend, or I take a virtue and I am honest enough with myself to notice when I violate it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not to beat myself up or to say I'm superior to the next person, but I look at the violation so I can trace it.
Mm-hmm.
It's much like the way a scientist would set up an experiment.
Right.
Exactly. And that's what we're looking at is with all of these qualities. We're looking for the opportunity.
And that's the wonderment that we're always talking about.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing right there. Like,
yes.
How we're learning.
And I think if we can look at the virtue as a, almost like a trip meter, setting a virtue this week, and that's the way the application that I'll be designing in our journal will be. It's take one of these on,
yeah,
as a way to keep you honest,
mm-hmm,
right? By definition, it's an honesty, right?
Right.
How
yeah,
do you keep
that's,
yourself
that's
honest?
That's where it's a truth quality. It's keeping you honest.
And if this is why religion is normally where virtue belongs, is because it gives us fundamental honesty. It's one of the fabrics of our society.
Mm-hmm.
That allows us to have these things. But if we're practicing and we're not an organized religion, so to speak, as admirable friends, but we're practicing to be true to our intentions, then we have to be honest with ourselves. And morality is a very important part of this. Well, first of all, it's skillful. That's why I phrased the question. It's skillful to act virtuously because it's consistent with a non-harming, reliable happiness.
A lot of it was set up not only to live harmoniously yourself, but also when you're engaging others. A code of moral excellence is also about community. You know, it brings others into your circle as well, and you really get.
So let's not try to achieve high ground by being the most morally superior beings, but let's look at our virtue as a tool to help us get to our intentions and start fixing some of the problems we live with every day. If, in fact, and I won't use the concept of original sin or get into the religion side, but if we have some taints, in other words, like Alex, I think you said, we tend to be greedy. We tend to be angry. We tend to be deluded,
mm-hmm,
right? How are you going to catch those three little rats? How are you going to catch the greediness in you? How are you going to catch the anger in you? How are you going to catch the delusion in you unless you set up with some truth to go against, mm-hmm. some rules to go against, right? If we have these tendencies to be greedy and you have no rules, then greed is going to win.
Well, you've got stress and you've got no stress. How do you know which side of the table stress falls on? You got to set up that other side to know kind of when stress is being, shown. And so that's really what the virtue setup is, like an antidote. You know, it's one of those antidotes you just set up to keep you.
Yeah. And if we keep thinking about that as a self-imposed training tool versus an externally imposed rule to judge our moral character.
Okay? Yeah, that's well put right there. I think that's probably the best way of going about it. It is an internal tool versus an external justification.
Yes.
Or judgment of who we are. Versus, I'm going to use this to dig into my intentions, because if I don't get to intention, I'm never going to solve the problems I live with every day. My actions will continue on autopilot. I agree conceptually that intention drives my actions. There's a reason behind every action. I get that. In order to watch it and pay attention to it, I'm going to have to trip the meter. There'll also be runaway greed or runaway anger.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in check. It's almost like a governor on an engine.
Yes. I think that's a great example.
Then we'll take a break on that one.
Really?
Let's take a break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness? We're grateful to have you join us today.
We're back.
We are back.
I was caught totally off guard when you said the last time that we had finished the first half hour. I had no idea how fast the time went by or what the time was at all.
It flew by, and judging by Alex's comment at the break, he thinks we did cover, he's one of the best listeners in the group. He said he thought we finally covered this virtue thing, and hopefully people were listening or catch it on podcast.
Yeah.
Because it is, I don't think we can replace the word virtue, because it is morality we're talking about, but it's for the purpose of what are we doing it for? You know, how's it tied to our program and to our intention of what we're trying to do with ourselves to improve ourselves?
And I think virtue, as used commonly and before, has gotten a bad rap, and people tend to just run in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a really good way to deconstruct it and break it down.
Let me put one. I just said the word improve ourselves, and I want to put the word understand/improve ourselves. You know, because I do want to take the weight off of all this self-improvement. This practice that we're talking about is one of discovery of our intentions. There's got to be a lightheartedness associated with this, or it won't work. I can't stress that enough.
And that was another point. I was hoping, and I do think our first half of this discussion has shown to anybody listening that we're right there with you. I mean, we take a topic, of course, we know it, what topic we're going in advance, but we have all week to swing at it as well. We're dissecting it and looking at it and seeing how virtue plays a role in our own lives and in our own practice, and how it's viewed, by several others. And
it's always a test, isn't it?
It's always a test. And, it's like you said, it's understanding more about ourselves. It's understanding more about, you know, our practice. And so, you know, we're putting the time in as well to really look at it and see kind of where is it? Why is it sticky? Is it a word that gets on people? Why is that? And kind of, I think we came out of it with something that was, it's, you know, you don't want to say universal, but like I said, lifts a lot of weight off of people and allows you to look at virtue in the light of, you know, very individualized.
Well,
you know,
we're a country built on ideals. Okay, let's face it. And there's a lot of pressure on each one of us to be the best. It just comes with living in this culture. And, you know, sure than heck, we've got 10 ideals that we're mentioning as part of our program. But that's only the outcome that we're looking at, the possibilities. We hope we are spending more time on the process of working day to day in a non-threatening, non-judgmental way. Remember, because it has to be calming, it has to be truthful. These determinations, you know, there has to be an element of restraint. We're trying to come up with practical ways to live a more reliably happy life, to stop all the friction, all the stress that we impose on each other and ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that we're going to add more stress trying to perfect ourselves.
No, and I think covering a topic like virtue, I've known about virtue growing up. You know, virtue's been there. You know what it's defined as. You kind of know vaguely what virtue falls under this category or that category. But what we've really done with virtue is really taken it and says, no, I can use this for something. I can use this for something. It's not just a concept kind of hanging out there, and I agree with it. We're actually putting it to the test. And I think that's really what's cool about it, is it's no longer just
it's
a name
dynamic,
on a
it's
shelf.
Not static.
Right. But that's why I say you can't throw the word virtue out. We're trying to strike that balance between letting go and taking aim, or actually doing something. You know, there's an element that we have to improve ourselves, and there's an element we have to let go of ourselves to keep the progression going. You know, just bypassing, you know, spiritually bypassing our experience is not the answer. Sitting on a cushion, you know, just ignoring the problems we face every day. But at the same time, we're not going to go out there forcing things either. Mm-hmm. So it's, but you can't let virtue go, because like you said, Alex, since the beginning of time, mankind has put those in place to keep them in check.
Yeah, you know, you look at it in that sort of view from 30,000 feet and you say, well, everybody's kind of using it for something. What is this thing that they're using? And we come to find out it's a skillful tool that, when in accordance with whatever your shift is going, it can be used, it can be defined, and it can be wielded to help keep you on
the track. If our actions are not in line with good virtues, then we're feeling a lot of self-hate about ourselves, a lot of doubt. Let's just assume that there's some possibility that we are not acting as immoral as we could be.
You know, and your virtues a lot of time reflect what you want back, the kind of place you want to be in.
Right.
You know?
But it would be real easy to just let that go. You know, unless you incorporated into it and you understood why I need to do it. It's really easy to let it go. I mean, I just think it is. And I think there's elements, part of our society, that is going through moral decline. And, you know, if there's not a check and balance, it could.
You know, and it's funny you talk about the current shift of where we see some things going, because I've seen it more and more, and I've talked with it more and more with people. And I think anybody out there who's in tune with what's going on in not, you know, internally, but also externally, and is very aware of their surroundings, can see that there's a lot of uprising, there's a lot of turmoil, there's a lot of anxiousness and anger and desire out there that is just wreaking havoc. But we also can kind of see that that's got to, you know, there's also a lot of goodness that's coming out of this result, that people are saying it's bubbling up to a point where it just, we can't do it anymore.
Well,
we've seen it enough, we're experiencing
movement, that mindfulness movement, they're asking us, we need to be more aware. You know, you need to be more mindful. And see, being mindful of your actions would be the virtue. How else are you going to be mindful of your actions? What's your measurement stick?
Exactly. And that's why I would say, don't shy away from looking at the way things are and saying, oh, things are turning awful. Look at that, because we're going to need to see those things to know that we don't want to do that.
Right.
We need it to bubble up, because otherwise, how are we all going to shift towards a way of living, you know, towards more virtues than more vices?
But these virtues are very tangible tools. I mean, when you talk about virtues of kindness, you're talking about kindness and generosity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not out of anybody's grasp or reach.
No. But it has to be practiced.
Sure.
It has to be put in check and balance.
Sure. As forgiveness and compassion, that's also part of the virtues of kindness.
Yeah, that's what makes it such a strategic and a good tool, is that, you know, you were showing me a list of, what was it, 120 different virtues that are out there versus
17 vices.
So you've got 120 virtues, right? You can almost do this grab bag of different virtues that can be tested and used strategically. Like a virtue of kindness, that may be strategically a great virtue to hold if it ends up proving up, you know, your determination. So you would stick with that sort of a virtue.
Well, I'll tell you, the common denominator for me are those three items. Your greed, the opposite. If you look at vice, and then you can, these virtues can all be put in a table of contents or a category. And to me, the opposite is that the three main vices that we deal with are greediness, anger, and delusion. We don't see, or we're ignorant to what we're looking at, right? So if you look at the opposite of greediness, you get into kindness, you get in harmony, you get in good speech.
Right.
You know, it all boils down to those three things that are our problems: excess greed, excess anger.
Well,
right?
You know what I think was just kind of overglazed, and I really want to make it a point of the vices you just picked and kind of letting everyone out there know the difference between a vice like that and a vice like alcohol or buying shoes.
Right.
There's external vices and then there's internal vices. And I think what you're speaking to is those internal leveraging vices that ends up,
they all fall down to there, but at any given point, a pair of shoes that I'm purchasing could be based in greed.
Exactly.
I already got 9 pairs.
Right.
Why am I buying the 10?
Right. So I just want to speak to the leverage of, you know, you can go externally and try to solve a bunch of these vices, but I think at the end of the day, you end up beating yourself up because maybe you did and you went and bought a pair of shoes or something, when the real stress is lying from one of those three.
Well, you know the way I work, Alex. I'm always trying to find the universality. The universal aspect of it.
Sure.
The particulars of the shoes. So if you say you build a community in saying you're only allowed 4 pairs of shoes because excess would be greed,
mm-hmm.
that's not, you're going to have problems with a rule like that because those are dealing with the particulars.
Right.
The universality that I have noticed are those three poisons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you can look at that as your guide that we can all connect with, then you can decide whether that pair of shoes was too much.
Yeah, I think you and I did it when we were talking about those three: what greed, anger, and
delusion,
ignorance. We were kind of doing this game of where you throw up a vice and then you draw it to one of those and see if it works out. Then no, go back to start, and then you kind of just check it out like that. And when you put those three out there and you do this quick check on them, it becomes this fun little game to just throw your vices up against them and see where they go. You know?
Well, actually, for our listeners, write those three numbers. Write those down if you got a piece of paper. Greed, anger, and I put aversion and anger on the same line,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then delusion. So to me, greed and anger are opposites. They result of us what you want and what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So your likes and your dislikes, which you're told by so many wise people, watch your likes and your dislikes, there's your greed and your anger. You like too much, there's your greed. You don't like, that's the source of your anger.
And this is what you don't know.
Which you don't know. So if you... To me, that's the shortcut of universal human problem.
Yeah. I like the way you defined it. They're even more simple. Things you like, things you're getting away from, and then things you just don't know.
Those are the only choices you got in life.
And
I like, I don't like, or I don't understand.
Yeah. And
right?
So
you're always trying to understand as human beings. We're trying to understand our experience more. And if we watch our likes and dislikes, there's our tripping points.
You know, I hope people are writing some of this stuff down. Of course, we're going to put it on there because it really becomes a fun practice when you have something like that you can work with. When you sit there and you can look at a vice.
We're looking for the simplicity, aren't we?
In this day and age, simplicity is really going to hit home a bit. And
I think, well, just take...
Just something to work with.
Just
something.
Take...
Well, you know, that's why we did the CPU, you know, the
right.
Concept, Practice, Understanding. And we see most of the times it just goes, the concept breaks the understanding. So you know, a lot of this freedom we feel is in the ability to practice with these things.
Well, just take the five mental barriers. On our website, we have the five mental barriers to clarity.
One of them
is anxiousness. Mm-hmm. Now tie it to one of those three. You can. Oh. It all comes down to those three roots of problems. Your anxiousness, you're anxious because you're not getting something you want or that you like. Or you're pushing something away that you don't like. It's creating anxiousness. Someone's in the room you don't like. The roots are at the root of all of our unskillful actions. Mm-hmm. So, Carol, you're one of the best speech people I've seen for using right speech. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Really?
Yeah, the best, one of the best I know. I very rarely catch you with unskillful speech, because if I do, I stand you up. It doesn't happen that often. Why don't you give us a...
I'll leave some childhood experiences out of this one.
Well, I don't think I've ever been accused of being somebody that didn't have a filter, you know, on what they say.
Yeah, you just don't let it go. No. I mean, you think about what things... If anything, you go the other way. I wish I said, right?
All the time.
What I should have said.
Yes. I err on the side of not saying.
So try to guide us through this virtue. Let's call it good speech.
Well, I think we all know what harmful speech is.
Right.
You know, lying, of course, is speaking with the intent to misrepresent the truth. Or divisive speech, which is speech that intends to create a rift between people. Mm-hmm. Harsh speech, which is the intent of hurting someone else's feelings. And then, of course, the idle chatter or the gossipy type of speech that's spoken with no purposeful intent at all. So,
the virtue of speech you could just work with.
That'll keep you busy forever.
That'll keep you busy. So, regardless of how much stuff we throw out here,
you don't know where to start.
I mean, there's two forms of action, right? There's a physical action and there's speech. Mm-hmm. Speech gets me in trouble more than anything.
Well, I like the three. Is it timely? Is it truthful? And is it beneficial? I mean, if you could stop before you actually say it and ask yourself, "Is what I'm about to say, is it timely? Is it truthful? And is it beneficial?" I guarantee it. You know, you'll be saying the right thing and not be caught unskillful.
Yeah, or just ask.
It's hard
yourself.
To do.
Yeah,
it's
or
hard
just,
to do
you know,
because
take
you know
these
why?
Forward.
Because how many times do you see people? You'll be speaking to somebody and you know that they're already thinking up a reply. I mean, so they're not thinking, is it timely, truthful, or beneficial? But of course...
There's another aspect of speech that could be used, is whether I'm listening, right, before I speak, truly listening.
Well, I would say give some space before you actually reply. You know, you don't have to jump in before the person finishes the last, you know... the last syllable, jump on it and answer it right away.
Okay.
It shows that you have a certain amount of thought behind it, for sure, if you give a space and then you reply.
It was interesting that we wrote about that our sense of humor, kind of a screwed up sense of humor, affects our speech. Did you read that in the overview? That's an interesting little twist.
Screwed up sense of humor?
Yeah, it's how we express our humor. In America, we're used to getting laughs with exaggeration, sarcasm, good stereotypes, and pure silliness. All classic examples of wrong speech.
Yes. Well, and then I think the whole point there was it desensitizes us to the actual art of conversation.
Go ahead.
Because when we desensitize ourselves to listening to speech in a way that's exaggerated or sarcastic or whatever, we kind of tune it out and we don't take it seriously. We look at it as non-essential.
Okay, so that would be a good... So we could say that one of our practices would be watch yourself for exaggeration in your speech. That could be a practice, a virtue that you took on, right?
You know, I think you...
Watch your sarcasm.
You just went through the three, the TBT, didn't you? Truthful, beneficial, and timely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that right there is a program for anybody who needs help in their social media posting. You know, right. Anybody on Twitter, Any athletes using Twitter, any celebrities using Twitter or posting things, what you give them is that three-step process before you hit post. And I think we save a lot of discourse out there that becomes fueled by one of these four. Think about it. Is it truthful? Is it beneficial? Is it timely? If you went through those three before you press post, you might just delete a few words or change it up or not even do it at all.
I know.
Or when you do it and it's in accordance with those, the feeling you get from contributing in a positive manner will help lift you forward to continue doing that sort of stuff.
We've got a couple of chats come through. Tom Sapp says, what about clinging? Doesn't that impact greed and anger? So there's a stress practicer. He knows that that's just where that clinging takes and how it impacts, right? When you do cling, mm-hmm. and you get attached to something, it's going to lend itself right to greed and anger. Kate says, I like the term fluff for the meaningless speech. Shout out to Alex and Gabby for introducing me to that one.
Yeah.
What was that all about, fluff?
I was introduced that from my wife, Gabby. She fluff, you know, fluff for me is old school peanut butter and fluff. You put that on a bread and that's magic. So,
well, there's a lot of that in your social media, isn't there?
So, but it's also symbolic for that, you know, just that thing that goes in there, that's sugary, that's sweet, that you know it's bad for you, but it's good, right? So it tastes good now, but the feeling, it's going to leave you with a bad feeling. So I don't know if that's what you meant by fluff. I think fluff is kind of, you know, it's got no weight. It's kind of
not
airy.
Essential,
it's not.
Wow. I'll tell you what, though. Skillful speech really takes a lot of discernment to work through those as a practice. So like you say, it's probably one of the best virtues we could start right there on.
And
I don't know how many times you've said, Carol, people have lost the art of conversation.
I feel it's true. Nobody knows how to converse. But I think for all those people that are out there listening and our admirable friends, during the holidays now, it gives us a great opportunity because we're at social gatherings, whether it's at work or whether it's in family mm-hmm. dynamic or whatever, to hear the speech that goes on and how it's sort of like this call to action now through the holidays and to the start of the new year, is to listen to the speech that's out there and make note of how we contribute skillfully or unskillfully to the tone or listen to how somebody else is speaking and how it reflects on the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot more power on the art of conversation than we give ourselves credit for.
Yes.
You know, we can, we have the power to turn the conversation.
It sounds like what you're really telling me is that virtue app that we do on the journal should probably start with speech.
Well, I think that's the easiest one for people to even start to tackle, and it gives a whole lot of meat.
Right there, you know.
Yeah, that's
ready
to practice,
is,
yeah. I would like to mention before we close off tonight, too, that there's a couple of other aspects of contextual virtue for us in the program. One is pay attention to your livelihood, how you make your money, right? Think deeply about that and whether that is consistent with less stress, right? Your vocation, so to speak, is an internal. The other is, of course, is always your excesses, what you're purchasing, whether you really need it in terms of clothing, why you're buying what you're buying. Same thing with the body, right? What you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
Are you eating it to look good, to be bulked up, or are you eating it to be healthy? You know, these are kind of inner qualities of virtues, part of taking pledges to keep you watchful, mindful of your actions. And every time you're mindful of your actions, you stand a much better chance of reaching that intention that preceded that action. And that's where the transformation takes place. It's always at that intention. So we watch our actions, run them up against the meter,
mm-hmm.
the virtue meter, and then we back to intention, and we can put that right in our journal at that point. Remember, all the progress we had in the journal was working on the opposites, right? Where we were our talents were raw,
right? Oh, yeah,
is what illuminated our journals.
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than talking about everything we do well, but we are running out of time, and boy, I hope we covered that. It was nice to have some people chatting in. I hope we're able to. What do you think, Cal?
Well, I think they can. They could certainly feel free to email us if they, you know, if they were confused about anything, or they want clarification, or they just want to give an example of what they feel about virtuous acts, or how they feel that they can tackle that.
It always represents the biggest challenge for us out of the 10, isn't it?
It really does. It's the most interesting for us because there's a lot here, but it just seems to really scare a lot of people away from commenting, because I think they think in those terms of that pious and high and mighty, morally superior virtue, in parentheses, but... Mm-hmm.
Versus a way to be authentic.
Yes, right. So we've kind of just stripped it down and said, no, you're not all that.
And it's okay.
This. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's okay.
I think we've identified a very useful tool for anybody developing and practicing a way to use and to really test themselves.
When you put it in those terms, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, a lot of its origins do lie in religion, but it lies in a lot of religions, in a lot of cultures. So let's look at this.
Back to Aristotle, too. This is timeless. Virtue is timeless.
And it all starts with just asking the question and drilling down enough to really, get into these things and really, break down your own perceptions of these terms and working with them. Take a couple swings. You'd be amazed.
Yeah, maybe next time we cover it, we'll even have a better email that goes out that might get more inquiries or comments on it.
Oh, yeah.
Each time we go through this, it gets easier and easier.
Yeah, we find new things. So I fully believe by the next time we're talking about virtue, we're going to have a lot more to talk about, more experiences, more...
Well, that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
More real conversation on what we're doing here.
Okay, folks, until next week, we hope you have an admirable week with your practice. And please don't forget to keep using the system. And when you feel it appropriate, mark it public, anonymously, because
it's
an act of generosity. It counts on the meter.
It's
an act of generosity because people do look at those public postings, and it's starting the conversation. It's a shift. Bye-bye. See you next week.
Good night.
Take care.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.